Welcome to the Post Game Plan. My name is Ali Samani. This is the career development home for all current as well as former NBA players. Today, we have a very special guest. His name is Mark Eaton, and he is a two-time NBA Defensive Player of the Year, former television broadcaster, restaurant owner in Utah, also a former president of the National Basketball Retired Players Association, and now a board member. Founded a very strong youth organization and is a very successful businessman and motivational speaker. Mark, how are you doing today?
Doing well, Ali. How are you today?
I'm doing well. Like, what are you not doing? There's such a long list of credentials that you got there.
Well, it's been a journey, that's for sure. I've done a lot of different things. I'm primarily focused right now on the motivational speaking and the restaurants. Those are my two things that I spend the majority of my time doing. But I've certainly done a lot of things in the 17 years I've been retired.
Yeah. So, I mean, I kind of want to walk through the journey a little bit with you. Now, during your NBA career, I mean, did you consider, you know, some of your options post-retirement, or was that something that you only looked at after you retired?
You know, I considered it from kind of a financial standpoint of trying to be a good investor and doing those kinds of things to make sure that I was set up for retirement. And in terms of business development or anything like that, I really didn't know what I wanted to do other than, you know, maybe run some youth programs and contribute to the community that had supported me for so many years. And I think a lot of athletes feel that way. And but when you retire, it's still a shock. You know, it's just you don't think it's ever going to end. And I don't care how well prepared you think you are mentally, it's still a transition. It's still difficult, and it takes a while for you to find your bearings again.
So what were, I guess, when you first initially, you know, those first couple of days or even that first year, what were some of the things that you looked at and kind of considered?
Well, honestly, I thought that maybe the team would hire me after I retired to do public relations or, you know, maybe do some broadcasting or something like that. And there really wasn't much interest. And I can't say I went in and said, hey, you know, do you want to hire me to do something? I just kind of assumed that because I'd spent so much time with the team and my number was retired by the team that, you know, they would think maybe that they would want to keep me around in some way, shape, or form. And that just wasn't their philosophy. And it's not to disparage them at all. I mean, that's just how they were. But that's kind of what my thought process was at that point in time. And when it was clear that wasn't the case, then I had to say, okay, now what? And I'd run into a gentleman who owns some restaurants in San Francisco, and you know, restaurants and athletes usually don't go together very well, but he had the background and expertise of running successful places, just at least three locations, wanted to create a partnership with two or three people. Everybody put in their share of the money. There was not like his idea and my money. He was right in there with the rest of us, and he was willing to be the executive manager, run the day-to-day operations, and he used to be the president of Budget Rent-A-Car, so he knew how to run an operation. And so this process, I probably spent a year looking at this opportunity. I met with his bankers. I met other people who've done business with him. I asked a lot of hard questions before I jumped in partnership with him, we created a partnership. We looked at probably 50 different locations around Salt Lake City. We found a great spot in a very nice neighborhood, and he wanted to be a neighborhood restaurant because those were the models that stood the test of time. And we found this beautiful location, and we spent about a year and a half renovating this building, spent a ton of money on it, but we were one of the lucky ones. We were an instant hit when we opened. We had a six-week waiting list
for
reservations. And it also coincided with the timing of when the Jazz retired my jersey, so we kind of leveraged that from a publicity standpoint and really hit the ground running and just knocked it dead for 4 or 5 years there. And so that was a successful venture. You know, we tried a couple others later on that didn't go as well. You know, one in particular, we opened a little bistro a month after 9/11, and you know, that just never got had a chance. Just you get it's so much about that first impression and coming out the block strong.
Right.
And it never had a chance. And I took a big bath on that one, as did my partners. And so had my ups and downs in that business, but my primary location, Tuscany, is still there 15 years later. We're still going strong, and
that's
you know
fantastic.
We know business isn't what it was many years ago, but we're still doing okay. And we've opened a second location about 5 years ago on our same property. That is another bistro concept, but much smaller than the one that we had previously opened. And you know, I guess the lessons there going forward is if I was going to open one today, it'd be a small place, you know, in a rented space, and really look hard at what you put into the overhead, because, you know, there's ways to do it that you can make money. But when we start getting in there and waving our hands and say, we should have this and we should have that, all of a sudden your capital expenditures are so high that it makes it really difficult to recoup your investment. And, that's kind of the restaurant story.
Okay. Now, just to, you know, before we kind of move ahead, I did have a couple of questions. How do you conduct your due diligence? I mean, you're entering into a new market, you're entering into a new industry. Obviously, you have these proven entrepreneurs that you're working with, but you're coming in with your own, this is your own prerogative. This is one of your own initiatives, and you're putting in an equal amount of money. How did you conduct your own due diligence to determine, is this the right partner for me? Is this the right business model for me?
Well, some of it was intuition, and a lot of it was asking, was, you know, his willingness to allow me to speak with his banking partners, to speak with other partners that he's been in business partnerships before, and kind of open up his books and let me look around. And you know, I have an accountant friend that looked over a few things for me, and you know, I think you've got to go back into your team of experts that you rely on, that you can trust to, and that can look at it unemotionally and say, okay, well, here's what I like, here's what I think are concerns, so that you're making, you know, you're never going to eliminate all the concerns. There's always a risk going into any business, and even the best laid business plans, you know, can blow up on you. It's not about being an athlete. It's, you know, there's businesses fail all the time for a variety of reasons. So I did that, and I think I also, you know, read some books on being an entrepreneur and taking some business classes in college. So I had a general idea of what to ask. I mean, there's no substitute for experience, unfortunately.
Right. Right.
You can ask all the questions you want, and you know, the bottom line is if it works or it doesn't, and it's not necessarily the fault of a partner or something like that if it doesn't work. But you know, you just have to go in with your eyes open and say, okay, if this thing completely blows up, will I be okay if I lose my investment? And I think that was probably the biggest thing that I learned, was just taking a real step back and saying, okay, I'm going to invest this much money. And I can afford to lose it.
Okay.
And if you go in with that attitude, then you got a fighting chance.
Right. Now tell me a little bit about, you know, obviously that endeavor has been, you know, quite successful over the course of time. Tell me about some of your other projects. And just to backtrack a little bit, I know you completed, you went into the NBA in your senior year. Is that right? From UCLA?
Yeah, after my senior year, yes.
And did you complete your degree at UCLA?
I did not.
Okay.
You know, I was a sociology major, and what I was going to do with that degree, I have no idea. Even to this day, some days I think, well, maybe I should go back and complete that. I'm like, well, why?
Right, right.
where is it going to take me? So I didn't, you know, I was hurt a little bit coming from junior college. A lot of the classes I'd taken in junior college did not transfer well to UCLA, so I lost almost a year of credits when I transferred.
Ah, okay.
And so that kind of set me back that way. So, you know, on we go. And
right.
I've just used life experience and things like that to kind of be my teacher and figured it out.
And how did you find the interest and develop an interest for professional speaking and motivational speaking? Where did the genesis of that idea come from?
Well, from, like all athletes, I was asked to speak at a lot of things as a player.
Right.
And then a few years after I retired, I was, you know, they did ask me to come help with the broadcasting for the team. And I started doing that and got more comfortable behind the microphone. And and then when I turned 50, it was like, all right, now, you know, now what are you going to do? I mean, the restaurants were doing okay, but the cash flow wasn't really great. You know, investments weren't quite what they were. And you find after, you know, 10 or 15 years of living off of your investments that a lot of times, you know, and I gotten divorced. And so that took a, that had a major hit on the finances. And so it was kind of like, all right, what am I going to do next? How can I take what I already know, what I've already learned, and put it in a new box?
Right.
That it has value to other people. And I think that's the key, is whatever you do, it's got to have value to the people that you're selling it to.
Absolutely.
The consumer, the people that's coming into your restaurant, or the people that are going to hire you to speak. You've got to provide something of real value to them. You can't just get up there and tell stories. But I looked at this and said, well, you know, what could I do next? And motivational speaking was one way I could take something I've already been doing on a lower level and raise it to a higher level. And so I started investigating, what does it take to be a great motivational speaker? And I started, you know, I had some friends that were doing it. And I started talking to them. The first thing I figured out is I had to develop a really good speech. And I hired a friend of mine who's a screenwriter to help me with my first speech. I spent a lot of time putting it together, practicing it, and then trying to go out and give it to the Rotary Club or the Kiwanis Club or wherever I could find a place where people would listen to me. And then they'd say, well, you know, what do you think? You like the speech? You don't like the speech? And they gave me their feedback, and I went back and I tweaked it, and eventually joined Toastmasters, started going to those meetings, ended up going to one of their boot camps of how to be a better speaker. Learned about the National Speakers Association, joined that, went to one of their meetings, met a person at a workshop who was a coach that worked with professional speakers. I hired her, and I spent literally, you know, two and a half years completely rewriting my speech again with her from the standpoint of what would it take to create a speech that a business audience would say, yes, I have to hear that message. And it kicked my butt. I mean, it was hard financially. It was hard mentally and emotionally. It was like going back in training camp for 2 years to really figure out what needed to be done to take this to the next level. But you know, she would tell me, she's like, Mark, how long did it take you to become an all-star in the NBA? I said, well, 9 years. She said, you think you're going to be an all-star speaker in 6 months? I said, yeah. And you know, it's not reality. It's hard work.
Do you mind if I chime in for a quick second? This is a great story. I'm so amazed as to, cause you know, coming into the interview, in my own perspective, I had assumed that most of, like you said, you know, a lot of the, you know, professional athletes have opportunities to speak at many different places while they're playing at certain levels, whether you're speaking to kids or you're speaking to a certain audience. And I would assume that the translation to that into another world or to another, I guess, audience would be very easy. But it seems like you really went through a rigorous course and study and program. You really dedicated yourself. It's quite amazing.
Well, you know, I can't say that I knew that going in. Right. I thought the same as you, that, you know, you put some stories together, you go out and start telling speeches, and people start paying you $10,000.
Right.
It doesn't work that way. And I think a lot of it has to do with the economy the last few years. You know, the day of the just pure inspirational speaker, I think, is kind of over. People want meat. They want things they can take home and that they can apply to their lives and do differently, a process or something like that that's really going to make a difference for them. And that's why they hire you to bring you in. I looked at, you know, and my coach was very tuned into that. She looked at the marketplace and said, look, this is what people want right now. You know, it could change 3 or 4 years from now and it's something else. But we took the time to really research, you know, what is it that people really want? And, you know, that's how I've done that. And it's taken time. I think the first year I made, I don't know, maybe $40,000 doing speaking, you know, $500 here and $1,000 there, and you know, whatever I could, wherever I could get, and you know, even high schools can pay you $500 to go speak. And, you know, and then I've grown it to, you know, to 3 or 4 years. I'll probably make about, I'm probably grossed about $300,000 this year in my speaking business.
That's fantastic.
You know, and I've got work to do. You know, I've got my friend Walter Bond, who's also a retired basketball player, who you ought to interview sometime.
Yes, definitely. I know Walter Bond.
You know, he's got $1 million speaking business.
Wow.
He's taken it up to a whole nother level. Now, he's 6 or 7 years further down the road than I am in experience. But, you know, it can be done.
Right.
But it takes work, and you have to get past the frustration of how hard it is. But it's no different than going out and shooting jumpers every day.
You got to
do the right things.
Exactly. And I like the idea that, you know, there's a real message that you're condoning here in itself, that, you know, real excellence, real success, you know, comes from the number one factor of a dedicated type of mind, you know. And it seems like you had a very dedicated, you know, even though you may have not gone into it, you kind of stuck through it. And that's the real difference, right? Because it's so easy at times to give up on certain things, especially when you're a retired athlete. You may not want to, you know, go full-fledged with something because you expect a certain return almost instantaneously. And basketball is something, obviously, that's come second nature.
You do, because, you know, coming off this reel, you're at the top of your game playing basketball.
Right.
And you think you're just going to be able to walk to the top of some other game without the work that goes in between. And I think as athletes, you know, our ego kind of gets in the way and say, well, you know, people hire me just because I'm me and I played in this community and people know me and they love me. Like, well, you know, you might get one or two speaking engagements because of that, but the bottom line is, if you're going to get booked again and again, it's because you provide that value. Just like people might come to the restaurant once because it's my restaurant, but if the food and the service aren't great, you know, they're not coming back.
Exactly.
And so you got to look at it from that perspective. And so what does it take? Just like, what does it take to play in the NBA 82 nights a year, like consistently every day? It's like, what does it take in business to be great day after day after day after day? And it's a lot of times it means putting your ego aside and saying, hey, I need some help here. Can you show me what I need to do next? And you'll be amazed at how many people are willing to step up and help you if you just get out there and ask. But you do have to kind of put your ego aside a little bit and go do the business networking and meet the people. And some of them will help you and some of them will be flakes, and you know, just like anything else. But eventually, if you keep walking down the road, the next door will open and the next door will open and the next door will open. And you take the experiences and learn from them and keep on moving.
Exactly. Great messages there. Now, can you tell me a little bit about some of the companies that you've, you know, been a professional speaker at? I've read some really Fortune 500 companies that you've worked with.
You know, yeah, I've done, I've found little niches that I've been able to dig into and go deeper into. And, you know, I've done financial planning companies, I've done some insurance companies, and in insurance, I found this interesting little niche of captive insurance companies, which are basically workman's compensation companies that are self-funded. So instead of going out and hiring some company, this particular group puts companies together and they pool their premiums and create their own workman's comp company. And if they keep their safety records together for the course of the year, and this would be construction companies, manufacturing companies, trucking companies, anybody that has workers who are at risk during the day of getting hurt, if they keep their safety records together, they get most of their premium back at the end of the year. So they put conferences together a couple of times a year where they bring in these groups of companies, and it's usually 200 to 300 people at a time, and have conferences about how to teach your team safety, how to create a safer workplace. And I've been able to take my message on teamwork and meld it a little bit towards safety, and created a little niche where I've been able to go out and speak to all kinds of construction companies, and I go to these captive insurance workshops, and then I get spinoffs from them because they hear me and they say, well, we want you to come and speak to our company now. And that's been a cool little niche that I've developed. I've done some network marketing companies, and I've got a health insurance one I'm doing next week. I'm doing a food broker company next week. And mostly it's just been, every time I go out and speak, I ask for referrals. I have a little sheet that I ask them to fill out, and I follow up with them. And that's the other thing, is following up and following through with your customers. I send them thank you notes. I send them a little signed poster after I speak to them. And I ask them for a referral, and then I have an assistant, and we put that referral in our computer program, and we follow up with them and call those people, and that's where the next speaking engagement comes from.
Wow. So, I mean, you really learned, I guess, all of the little intricacies of owning a business as well as being a professional speaker. I mean, there's so many little elements, but you've tried to touch on each of them. It's not like you just kind of go out there, speak, come back, and that's the end of it.
And yeah, wait for the phone to ring.
Yeah, no. Hope for another call, because it doesn't work like that, right?
No, it takes proactive, energy, and you have to kind of put your eye on the prize of where you want to be as a speaker. What's it going to take? What do you want to create monthly in income, and what is it going to take to get there? And then it means calling 15 or 20 people a day on the phone. That's what that's what you got to do. And the good news is that there's plenty of opportunities out there. The market is there. There's a lot of speaking engagements available, and if you know how to mine them and find the right people, you can get them. But it takes some work, and it takes work every day, just like going to practice every day. You got to get up and say, okay, what are the three things I'm going to do today that are going to move my business forward and that I'm going to get accomplished no matter what other distractions come up? And it might mean doing it at 10:30 at night, but, that kind of commitment is what it takes to move it to the next level.
So I have two final kind of questions. The first one is, and I hope you can answer this. I'm thinking, there's a lot of obviously retired players out there, and as well as current players that, want to enter different fields, and similar to yourself. I mean, professional speaking obviously wasn't something that you were accustomed to. Playing basketball was, and you were entering a new field. How does someone deal with, the potential? If you're calling 20 times, 15 times a day, there's a high chance that your conversion rate is going to be like maybe 1% or 5% or whatever it is. How do you deal with that type of uncertainty or failure on a continuous basis and stay motivated?
I guess what I've learned is that failures are going to happen, and you just have to learn from them, and you've got to look at what your risk is going in. There's no guarantees. I mean, you come out of playing as an athlete, you think everything's going to be great now, I got money, whatever, then there's health things that comes up, there's relationship things that pop up, there's, financial things that pop up, and I think what I've learned is you just have to kind of step back from the big picture, take the big picture in and say, okay, where do I want to go, what do I want to do next, and start walking that way, and the rest of it seems to kind of fall in place. But it's easy to get pulled off the freeway and stuck on an off ramp going around and around in a circle for a while, and you have to kind of stop yourself and say, okay, let me get back on track. And I think it takes teammates to help you. I mean, that's the only way I've gotten to where I am today is because I had a coach that taught me how to play basketball when I was an auto mechanic. I've had a coach in the speaking business. I had a great partner in the restaurant business who've taught me what I needed to know. And between that and my own experiences, I've learned how to kind of get myself back on track and keep on moving. And it's not perfect every day, and some days it really sucks. But my goal is clear where I'm going to go, and I just keep moving towards it. And the longer I do that, the more successful I become. And that's just been my experience.
That's great advice. Now, speaking of that, a good segue, I would, love to ask, what do you see, your own, is your focus right now your professional speaking business? Is that something that you're kind of completely devoting your time towards?
Yeah, it is. I spend one day a week on the restaurants, and okay, the rest of my time is on the speaking business. And where I see it going is being able to continue to build my base of customers and take my message and put it into new forms. So I've got this base philosophy of the four commitments of a winning team, and now I'm trying to decide if I could do that in some sort of a video series that people could watch, one video thing a week for a year, that maybe I could sell a company that they could use for training, such as safety training, for instance.
Right.
I'm working on a small little book. I want to get one book done. That's just little tips for my speech. trying to get that done this year, and then just continuing to do a better job on the platform so that bigger and bigger companies and bigger conventions will see the value of my message and say, we got to have this guy. So it's continuing to try and see what I can do to be a wow when I'm on stage.
Absolutely.
And that just takes practicing my speech more and really feeling it and, you know, becoming more emotionally involved in it. And I'm getting there. But, again, it hasn't happened overnight. I've given, 150 or 200 presentations, and I'm just feeling now like I'm really starting to feel and own my speech.
Wow. It goes to show you the amount of dedication success requires in any element that whatever you're working on, right? Because it really requires
a
selfless dedication. Yeah.
I wish I could tell you there was a shortcut, but so far I haven't found it.
Yeah.
Other than getting yourself out of the way and starting to move forward is the only shortcut I can find. As long as you sit around and think about it, it's not going to happen. But when you get into action, stuff starts popping loose. It's pretty cool.
That's great. Now, towards the end of each show, we'd like to have a kind of a pay it forward moment where, we get our guests to kind of speak to some of the current players that are out there, as well as some of the former players, and give them some tips on their experiences, and whether it's one or two short tips or a couple of things that you think would be vital for them to hear based on your journey thus far.
I think if you're a current player, the message would be to take care of your body, do whatever you need to do to keep yourself as healthy as possible for as long as possible, and enjoy the ride. Take care of your money, don't do crazy stuff, put it away, and then when you retire, I honestly don't know if I'd do anything for a couple of years. I might just sit and kind of let the emotion of the NBA kind of settle in behind me and, go do youth programs or something like that that doesn't require any major capital expense, and just really think long and hard about what you want to get involved in. I do, career counseling, or look at what you're really interested in. There's a lot of resources I know the Players Association has to do that kind of stuff. And then if you're a little further down the road and have been retired for a while, I honestly think go back and take a self-inventory of what are the things that I do have, what are the assets that I can work with now in terms of personal values that I can, turn into value for someone else. And speaking is one way to do it. People love to hear from athletes, and if you can take the time to put together a solid message, there's no reason you can't go out after writing your speech and start making, $500, $1,000, $2,000 pretty easily without a whole lot of effort. And it'll evolve from there. So those are my two pieces of advice.
Thank you so much, Mark. This has been a fantastic interview. I think that a lot of my listeners have definitely benefited just listening to your journey, as well as I think it's important, the message that you're really conveying here, that you got to surround yourself with great people, and it's only other individuals that are going to help you get to where you want to be. And secondly, it really requires a selfless dedication to be successful, and you have to kind of forget about yourself, forget about your ego, and just push hard, head to the ground, and work at it, and eventually you will feel that certain level of confidence, as you did when you were playing the game. And, I really want to thank you on this interview. This was a fantastic piece.
Cool.
Yeah.
Well, my pleasure. Glad to do it, and I hope people get some value out of it.
Definitely. So this has been the Post Game Plan. My name is Ali Samani. Our guest today was Mark Eaton. We hope you guys enjoyed the show. And we will see you guys again soon. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mark. And thank you to the audience. Take care, Mark.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. No problem.